This podcast is a production of Bread on the Water Media and RadioForThePeople.com and is engineered by Audio Diner Studios. Our theme music is provided to us by our dear friend Gordon Bonham, whose music can be purchased through GordonBonham.com. Our graphics for this podcast are provided by Kathy Piercy Fryan. The podcast is sponsored by Artisan Realtors and Silicon Prairie Ventures.
This podcast is intended to give people a glimpse at what it's like to get a bad diagnosis, whether it's cancer or something else, and then go through a traumatic experience. First, we will discuss how my cancer story affected me and my family. Then we will talk about how their experiences affect other patients and their families, including discussions around why you need to advocate for yourself or for your family member. As we explore other patients' experiences, we will talk to some professionals about how to move forward after a traumatic or not medical event. I expect this to be a discussion that changes over time to reflect these combined experiences that I and others have had, and what our journeys are like, and the inevitable twists and turns that go along with real-world experiences. Join us on this ride as we attempt to show joy and laughter as well as the tragedy. Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of Normal, What's That Like? Before we get started today, I'd like to thank a couple of people. First of all, I'd like to thank the artist who did the podcast art, which is Kathy Piercy Fran, and Gordon Bonham, who did our music and the intro and the exit of the podcast. I also need to thank our sponsors, Silicon Prairie Ventures and Artisan Realtors. So with that said, just a quick reminder what the podcast is about, if this is the first episode you've listened to. We're trying to talk about my experience initially with a traumatic medical experience that I went through, which in my case was cancer. But we're going to be talking as we go down the road to other people and to health professionals, et cetera. But today we're focusing on my family, particularly my wife, and her experience with what I went through, or what we all went through it, and we all had different experiences. And that's what we're going to hear today. Is you've heard my experience probably, but today we're going to hear a little bit about my wife, Georgianne's experience. And with that, I guess I need to introduce my wife, Georgianne Adams, and let her tell us a little bit about who she is and where she was before all this happened.
Well, hello, Dan. When I started thinking about doing this for you, I thought back at almost exactly 40 years ago when we met. We were very young. And it was the weekend after January 1 in 1984. And so we've been together a long time. I have been a nurse that whole time. I worked in neurocritical care for a very long time, and then progressed to doing several other things. I was a nurse educator, and then went back to school and became a clinical nurse specialist. The reason why I really talk about that is that really is significant to this experience, because a nurse, especially working with critical patients all the time, knows sick. And I remember telling people, Dan's really sick. And when a critical care nurse says really sick, it's different than somebody else who says really sick. I mean, when I say really sick, I think you could die anytime. And so that's really what we were experiencing, especially in the last hospitalization. We started this all out, and when you were first not feeling well, we really thought it was a kidney stone, and I was fine with that. You went to the doctor by yourself. How we've always treated our lives. We're very independent people. We both have our professions and are very kind of codependent. We don't do a lot of things socially without each other, but our work lives were very different. You know, I never would have thought about going to a doctor's appointment with you. So that first time you came back and you were so upset that the doctor wasn't even going to touch you and just not really listen to you. They already thought, well, he had a viral illness, blah, 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 blah. And so then when we went to that first emergency room visit, I've been at Methodist Hospital for almost that 40 years. So, you know, it's about 38 years. And it just happened that the resident that came and saw you was being supervised by the medical director of the emergency room, and I knew him. So the first thing I should have really thought about was when I drove home after you were admitted, he called me. What in the world did he call me for? I was like,
I'm not sure I knew that.
He said, we're going to figure it out. Your lab work just looked weird. It was weird. It wasn't anything routine. So that's kind of starts the new normal of what we went through. You know, you were in the hospital probably the first two times where you were just home like a day and a half, maybe a weekend in between those hospitalizations. And it changed. Life changed after that. The first two hospitalizations, I did not stay with you. I have always been a proponent that you're in the hospital to get hospital care. And I was not one of those people that thought I needed to be there 24/7. Well, the third time, that's a little different. I stayed all the time. But so our new normal was now. You had taken care of a lot of the financial parts of our marriage. We had pretty probably routine or traditional roles. We shared roles. We didn't, you know, I'll take the garbage out and you'll cook, but pretty traditional. So those things really, really changed, especially the financial stuff. Because back when we were living together before we got married, I had done all the business, paying all the bills. And you were like, no, don't pay that, pay this, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, if I'm not doing it right, you can have it. So you've had it the rest of your life. And so those things really changed. The other thing that was very significant is I had a 95-year-old mother who stayed with us essentially 1 week a month. My sister had her the other three, but we tried to give her a little bit of respite. She was very, she was at the end of her life. And so that first week in January, we had mother with us too. And so it was weird. You know, I'm taking care of mother. You're on the couch rolling around, not feeling good. And
making noise.
And I'm very lucky to have sisters who kind of took over and helped with that.
What other things were you talked about the new normal? What other things were significantly different? I mean, we've always been pretty self-sufficient. Did that change in some way?
Yes, it did. Which is the first time. So we are entering a new season in our life. We're getting very close to retirement. I had gone part-time at the beginning in the fall right before you got sick. So we were thinking we were going to be grandparents and take care of kids and be able to travel more and do all these fun things. And then we end up in the hospital. And two of our daughters were there almost all the time. The other one kind of took care of the dog and stuff at home. But it's weird. It's so weird because, you know, we've always taken care of everybody. I've taken care of my mother. We took care of the kids. We take care of the grandkids. And now all of a sudden people are acting like they should take care of us, which was hard enough for you being a patient. But me as a nurse sitting at the bedside, to have two daughters come in and tell me what I should and shouldn't do was a little bit, a little bit strange. So it really is rolling us into this next season in our life. The other thing, like I said, you were so sick that you cognitively were not there a lot of the time. And one of the hardest things for me listening to your podcast was you didn't get it right. Not that I've ever been able to say that to you, which this comes up because we had a couple of friends who said, no, you guys should really act like you usually act, which
we don't banter at all.
Which we had a very good friend who he's remarried now, and his when he first introduced us to his new girlfriend that he would now his wife was dating, he said, now Dan and Georgianne, you might think they're fighting, but that's just the way they are. And so it, you know, that's what we do. So this was weird. This was different. You were in the hospital and I didn't really feel like I could, especially because people are watching you all the time, it was different. I was not challenging you the same way I've always challenged
and
you.
Did that create any issues along the way, the fact that you weren't challenging me?
Well, a couple times. The two biggest times were after your second hospitalization. You know, you talk about, and a lot of people say, well, weren't you so mad that they didn't diagnose you faster? Well, I live in the hospital world. It was not out of the ordinary. Your lab values, your tests, none of them were normal, as you put that. And so they were searching. They told us they were searching.
Right. Not to mention that the form of cancer I had was a very rare presentation. No right. tumors, right. all that kind of
the
stuff.
The lymph nodes. Yeah. No swelling of lymph nodes was huge. And so the second hospitalization, which I think you talked about, you were in a locked ward, which, you know, for
not on purpose,
because the hospital is very, very full right now. You know, it's flu season, COVID was still going on, and RSV. So you have all those respiratory illnesses. We were stuck in the emergency room and we needed a bed. So they put us on the med surge psych floor, which is locked. And, you know, you have to sign in, sign out, do all these things. You hated it. So I did get you I did get you off the floor. I thought you should be happy. You still weren't happy.
I was in the hospital.
And you wanted out of the hospital. Well, the she was a PA, okay, that was working with the oncologist or the hematology oncology. We still didn't know you had cancer. We didn't really think you had cancer. They kept telling us they didn't think you had cancer. You were like, I'm going home. And I was like, Dan, she's telling you, if you just wait one more day, you'll be able to get the, bone marrow, biopsy. And you were like, I don't care. I'm going to do this. I can do it outpatient. So then I got you home and we tried to schedule the bone marrow biopsy, and it was going to be, I think, 3 weeks. So you were still sick. You were still friggin' as sick as you were, but I had you home now. And so I had to call in a friend. Once again, I said I've been in this hospital system a long time. I don't know all the bedside people anymore, but I still know a lot of the administration. So I called the head of radiology, and I said, I guess I can say his name. I said, Todd, is this normal? Does it take a bone marrow biopsy 3 weeks when somebody's this ill? He said, yeah, that's kind of normal, Georgianne, but I'll see what I can do. And so we got you in, I think, that next week. Dan says 4 days. But anyway, so that was also very interesting. It's nice to have coworkers that you can depend on, but you also don't want to be that person either.
Were there other issues like that? Not only that I didn't remember, but that I wasn't as cooperative maybe, or wasn't willing to accept the sound medical advice I was given.
Well, this kind of goes into how it's hard to be a wife and a nurse at the same time. There were things that needed to be done that you should be doing, that I knew you should be doing, and you didn't want to do them. And then the other, you know, the other thing was you were so hell-bent about that NG tube, which you even said, and I talked to just one of the girls about this, and I said, well, you know, on his podcast, he talked about it was the happiest day in his life getting that NG tube out. But he also said he looked like a Holocaust survivor. So, you know, you wouldn't eat. We tried everything to get you to eat. The only way you were going to get out of the hospital, which was what you wanted, was to get this tube. And then you were non-compliant with the tube. And so it was very, very, very hard on me both ways for you to be, I mean, you really dug your heels in on this stupid tube and not getting your food. But so that was pretty hard. And then also very routine critical care things. People that have lost the amount of weight you've lost and how sick you are, you know, you should be turning, you should be eating, you should be doing deep breathing. I should have been turning you. I didn't do all those things.
So and, what you're saying is I wasn't the ideal patient.
Well, and the other hard thing is that the nurses that really were encouraging you and making you do the things are not the nurses you really liked a lot of the time. Now, not all the time, but you know, you really disliked a couple nurses that were doing things that you were supposed to be doing and that were really not taking your crap and saying, no, I don't want to do that. And so that was a little hard for me because also the girls didn't like those nurses either. So that was a little bit hard for me. And then the continuity of care in nursing staff and the different medical teams. We had multiple medical teams. As a nurse, you know, they don't always communicate, but as a patient, it's super, super hard to have those things happen.
Family, we've talked a little bit about the girls, and the girls are going to be on the podcast at some point soon, but we've talked a little bit about them, and I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit more about that, but also family, friends, and visitors. What, how'd that work? I think we had some different feelings on some of that stuff.
Yeah. So, like I said, two of the girls were there with me pretty much all the time. That third hospitalization, I would spend the night so I could hear the things in the morning, hear the doctors, then I'd come home for an hour or two. Abby would take the evening shift. Jessica and Maggie would be there pretty much all the other times. They all tried to work. We all tried to work at the bedside the first two hospitalizations. And they weren't there so much the first two hospitalizations, but the third one, they were there pretty much all the time. And so we had our little setup, and they were pretty good. Visitors is, you know, I've always, as a critical care nurse, you know, it's hard to have visitors. It's hard to have multiple visitors there. As a family member, it's hard when people would just show up. It was hard to have people take you out in the hall and ask you questions, and to see you in the state you were in was really, really hard. You you pretty much glossed over the fact that your cancer was in your liver and your spine. People that have liver cancer that I have seen, now I worked in neurocritical care, so I saw trauma and spinal cord and head injuries a lot more. Didn't see cancer patients, but people that are bright pumpkin, orange, yellow, don't get better a lot at the time. And I do remember one time talking to my manager, my boss, and I was just talking about how jaundiced you were and how sick you were. And he said, yeah, it's hard because you know what's probably going to happen. And, you know, we have a very good relationship, but it's true. I mean, and I would come home in the evening and walk with the dog. That was the one outlet I had. You have talked extensively with a professional. I went to EAP a couple times, and she said, well, make sure you're taking time for yourself, which is kind of a joke, but, you know, I would walk my dog and cry. That's the only time I would really cry. I am, you know, everybody's like, you are rock solid, Georgianne. Well, it's because I went into nurse mode. I don't really think of, how do you put it? It's when I started thinking about this podcast, it was all nursing stuff. And it's way different to be a nurse who has to take care of critically ill and terminally ill patients than to be a family member. And it's easier to go into that mode because I've done it for a long time. So to think of those things personally, one of my coping mechanisms is avoidance and to just not think about it. The girls laugh about that all the time. They say, well, I don't have anxiety because I just stuff it. I just I don't think about it. And so that was one of the hard things about this podcast is right. I had to really think about when you were really, really sick and how much our lives would have changed.
And so we were talking about visitors. I'm just going to throw this in. Yeah, we definitely, I think Georgianne and the girls, and we'll ask the girls when they come on too, but they were not wild, especially about the unexpected visitors, the people that just popped in the room without like having any knowledge that they were going to come. I felt energized. So, I mean, I do think that there's two sides to that, but I think it worked out okay, except for there was a couple of times I do know that Georgianne and the girls were both like furious that people had just stopped in unannounced. And it was when I was really sick.
We weren't that furious, but it was just so hard for us. You liked them. It was one more thing we had to deal with. Right. And so it wasn't that we were mad that those people came.
No, I agree.
It was just that we were dealing with so much, and then to have to, and doctors would come in anytime, and you didn't want to like push people out. And I mean, it's just such a complicated thing. The other thing that, I did want to say one little thing more about what you hated and why I started staying in the hospital.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was the bed alarms. And, you know, I have been on falls committees and understand that patients have to have bed alarms on. You hated that bed alarm. And so that's why I ended up staying every night. And, in fact, even when we didn't have seven, the oncology floor at Methodist, we were very lucky to be able to bring in a cot, and so I could sleep on that. But then when we went over to University Hospital, they didn't have room. They really didn't want you to have those kind of things. So Abby got us a little cot, and I'm sure people rolled their eyes when they saw that. But I would have a cot at night so I could sleep with you so you wouldn't have to have your bed alarm on. And there was a couple nurses that continued to make us have the bed alarm, but you hated that bed alarm.
Well, I mean, you could, if you dangled your legs off the bed, it took enough of the weight off the bed that the alarm went off. And it's very hard to do some of the functions they wanted you to do without dangling your legs off the bed. So, but yes, I mean, and I also admittedly, I will say this, and I think I said this in the original podcast piece, I was not really cognizant, and I know that now. I don't know at the time that I was really aware. I mean, I knew that there were times I had to say, I'm not taking this in when a doctor was talking or whatever. And I'd let them hear it and then come back and tell me kind of what they said.
Yeah, we did that a lot. But other coping mechanisms, I guess, with the girls, we would laugh at you, essentially, because we would have to, essentially, we would laugh because you would say things totally off of the wall. And if you remember, I think at least the thing about the
eyelids.
Well, the eyelids, I have two eyelids. You would tell us that all the time, and I can shut them. And then the thing about the hand sanitizer and the
underwear.
I didn't even remember that. But so other coping mechanisms I used, it's very interesting because you couldn't remember your passwords and different things like that. You own your own business. And so we had to kind of help. You very luckily had two people that really kind of took up the...
Stepped up. Yep.
And took over a lot of your business, your personal business, and helped with that. But Maggie and I decided to to take the real estate exam. So we took, we were in a real estate course, and that there's some interesting things about that. Hopefully Maggie will tell that story. But I did get my real estate license now. I took the course when you were in the hospital, and then I studied and finished it. And the other thing you didn't really touch on in your other three podcasts was our religious faith. So during the time, you know, people say, well, I felt your prayers. I know that I didn't feel that so much during the actual time. I was very, very lucky to have a couple ministers. Our pastor at our church, she came whenever I asked her to come. And then you have a very good friend who you didn't identify as our past minister, but our past minister was... even came from the East Coast, flew back to
see me.
Yeah, right. To see right. You. And so the and that church family supported us. Anything we needed, they took care of and helped out with. So I really feel that. You kind of go back to how things changed, though, too. So you have been out of the hospital for a long time. You're done with chemo, and you talked about that experience and how your friend was there, who happened to be Steve, our former minister, and being down at the lake and being able to soak. Well, that same day was the day my mother died.
Right.
It really bothers the girls that you went ahead and went down there on the day that she died. It was hard. It was a hard day. But I also didn't want to take that away from you, kind of our new normal. I don't think in the old day and that ever would have happened that way, but it did. And Steve was here. So, you did do that. And she had been put in hospice. And so it, like I said, it was a tough year for me. So
2023, you want to try that one again?
Yeah, exactly. And I also like to say, in retrospect, when I think about taking you out to the garden when you at Methodist, after you had had your first chemotherapy and essentially your gallbladder had backed up and you were in liver failure, taking you out, an orange pumpkin, and how sick you were, how bad you looked, how you couldn't walk two steps. And how you are today, it is a miracle. It's a scientific medical miracle. as well, but I do not believe that it could have happened if there's not a God. That's just my personal belief. And
well, and I concur with that, and I think at some future podcast we might have to delve further into that whole thing. The amount of support that we had from our church family and our circle of friends. We have a camping group. We have church friends. We have George Ann's high school friends who were absolutely phenomenal during this whole experience. Her high school friends, without them, our house would have been filthy.
One of my friends would come in and clean the house. One day we were looking at our Ring Fit camera. She had come over and she shoveled the walk. She would do things without us even knowing, did laundry.
Brought us food. They did all kinds of things, even in the hospital, let alone after we got home.
Yeah. So we are really blessed people. Really, I'm going to be looking at how we go forward, though, because this is, you know, you are very, very optimistic, even though you are very realistic. I like to just kind of think about it didn't happen.
Yeah, well, I wish that was true, too, but I think it did. And part of what we're trying to do today is let people share our experience so that they know whatever experience they're happening to them, while it might not be the same, is a equally good experience, and that things happen and relationships change, and your how you feel about life changes. And I know for me particularly, I have a completely different outlook on life. And as Georgianne said, I mean, the other thing we need to talk about at some point is I did see a professional. I have a professional coach that I still see, not a psychologist or psychiatrist per se, but she's a trained oncologist, and so she's dealt with cancer patients, and that's helped me tremendously. And anything else you want to?
I guess the last thing I just want to touch upon is the changes in intimacy when people are critically ill. And that's part of me as being a nurse who worked with stroke patients. But intimacy changes a lot when people are really sick. And we're talking 6 months. Very, very different. And so I think you just want to, you know, when you've helped somebody, when you've been a caregiver of a patient, in every aspect of their life, it really changes. And it's probably something we'll investigate further too. But this wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. And thanks for having me, Dan.
Well, thanks for being here. And again, I want to thank Kevin, who's our producer and engineer and does everything for this beer drinker for this podcast. But with that said, thanks for listening.